Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Friday. It's July 30th. Currently 55 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Forecast today calling for partly sunny skies, looking for a chance of a shower and a thunderstorm, likely after 1 o'clock with a high of about 81. We've got an 80% chance of a shower later tonight. 58 is the overnight low. Again, as temperatures warm up, a better chance for some rain tomorrow, about an 80% chance. A temperature high of 80 degrees on Sunday, looking for a high of 78. And looks like we'll have a better chance of some rain coming in on Sunday and Monday. By Tuesday, we start to dry out and warm up. Currently 65 degrees and a light drizzle in the Heber Valley. KPCW News Time now, 8:07. 8:07 now, and in the studio from Mountain Trails Foundation, Executive Director Laura Smith. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning.
Okay, so what have we got going on? Thank goodness for the rain, right?
Right. That is actually helping us quite a bit in the building of two major new projects in Park City. The first one is that I'd like to mention is has been funded by the city and a major donor to Mountain Trails, and it is called the Mother Urban Trail. It'll be up on the Treasure Open Space. It's 4 miles. It'll be kind of an alternative to Jenny's and Armstrong's, so an up trail for bikes and directional either direction for hikers. So it'll definitely help take some pressure off of those more popular trails. It'll be an easier, like lower intermediate climb, much like Jenny's again in Armstrong.
Okay, so where are you going to access it from?
My understanding at this moment is that we're accessing it from the what's it called, the Treasure Hill Trail. It's the one that comes right off of Lowell, mm-hmm. Kind of where you used to go up the dirt road. Now you can go up that cool single track. It's an up only. So it'll start, effectively, it's starting there. So it's not built yet. We had a little confusion on one of our trail reports where people thought it was already built. They're only about a half a mile into a 4 mile trail build, and they're starting from the top, working their way down, kind of through the Moose House area. So just be careful if you're out in that area. There's big machinery out there, and there's saws. You'll hear them. So if you hear them, just maybe go the other way.
Okay. And I guess, I mean, we've got flat cable that kind of also accesses that area. So where?
Yeah. So it'll be off to, I guess that would be sort of the southeast of that, mm-hmm. Through the Treasure Open Space. Okay. So, you know, remember we bonded for that. It's that big, many acres open space. I can't cite the number exactly.
Okay. So you expect that to be completed then this fall?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we will be completing that this year. As long as weather allows, we will keep plugging away at it. And we have a commitment to the donors and the city to have that done this season. So.
And why is it that the rain helps? Pack it down?
Yeah. So if you're, imagine pushing, the difference between pushing mud and pushing sand. So pushing sand, dry sand around is kind of what we're seeing. You know, when you get that moon dust, that really, really loose stuff that none of it, you know, we don't like to play in it either. It's just dusty and loose, and it doesn't pack. So, you know, making berms and side cuts and stuff like that, it just basically crumbles apart. But when there's some moisture in there, it sort of packs in. They're able to pack it in, and then it forms a trail and sticks. So. Yeah, this is, thank goodness, Mother Nature is cooperating with us.
All right, and then what's the other one?
The other one is the connector between the 9K and the Mid-Mountain Trail. So we realized it was actually part of a bigger plan. When we built the 9K trail, that took some pressure off of Mid-Mountain, but we knew this was going to happen. What's happening is that once you get kind of past that Black Forest area, which is a technical down, I mean, not most people don't want to do that. So the Mid-Mountain Trail is an intermediate trail. The 9K is an intermediate trail. But unless you go all the way over to Apex, there's really no comfortable mid-level trail to get down. So what we're doing is we're making that connection so that folks who are intermediate or who don't want to go quite so far, they can make that nice loop. So when we look at the big picture, connectivity and route development is a really important element of where we put trails and why we put them there.
Right. So is that going to be downhill only, or that be bi-directional?
It'll be multi-directional for hikers. It'll be down only for bikes.
Okay.
So.
All right. So how would you access then the 9,000 foot trail from Mid Mountain?
From Mid Mountain, you can
Apex. Then you have to come.
You can go from Apex. You can also access Corvair. If you go clear over to like Tour de Suds, you'd have to cross over the guard road at the very top and then connect in. The beginning of the 9K trail is off the Empire parking lot. That is only a viewing parking lot. It's not actually a trailhead. So we're encouraging people to go just a little bit past the pass where the Empire parking lot is, that small little parking lot, to the Bonanza Flat parking lot. And there's a spur. If you're in the Bonanza Flat parking lot and you look back towards Park City, it's really hard to miss the Carsonite sign that says, here's the spur, come this way, and you'll hit the 9K trail that way. It's a nice little warm-up.
All right. And then you've got the Mid-Mountain Marathon happening when?
We do. The course is marked, and you can run the marathon from August 1st to August 14th. So pick a day. It is a virtual race. When we originally decided whether or not we were going to go virtual, it was very early in the year. COVID was still very uncertain. We didn't know which direction, the world would be going in terms of COVID. So we said, okay, let's just make this a virtual race. And people have 14 days to run any day you want. Just pick a day, your best day, and go out there. One word of caution, it will be self-supported. There are no aid stations. So, I don't know, maybe you have a spouse or a friend or somebody who wants to come out and commit that kind of time to helping support the runners. But it is a fundraiser, and the finish is done. So if that's ever been a deterrent, because we recognize that the Iron Bill finish, that trail's heinous. But we're going down Moose Puddle now because we don't have to have the finish village and the line and all the accoutrements that go with that. We have just said, let's make this a little easier on the runners. We can go down Moose Puddle, and they just shoot right into the UOP parking lot and that's where the finish is.
Okay. How many registrants do you have? Is it down? Because it's...
Yeah, it's significantly down. But I will say that the folks who are doing the Triple Trail Challenge, which is a compilation of our three trail running races, there are over 100 Triple Trail Challenge racers. So that's really cool. People are just still being really supportive of mountain trails. And also, they want to kind of keep that tradition going. So that's pretty cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else?
That's it. Everybody just have a great day. Oh, one other word of caution. We, with the lightning and thunder and the storms that are blowing through, we wanted to just remind you, keep an eye on the sky. If it's starting to look like it's cloudy or you're hearing rumbling, it's time to get off of the trails. We had a trail crew that was stuck out in a pretty crazy downpour the other day, and they said it was really scary. So, just be careful. Eye on the sky. And okay. Have a great weekend.
All right. See you next week. Thanks, Laura. Laura Smith is the Executive Director of Mountain Trails Foundation. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, stay tuned. Just a minute, we'll be talking with the Bike Show Director for the Big Gears Show that's coming to Park City next month. Summit County Fair Manager Tyler Orgill and Kate McChesney. And to tell us about the return of the Summit County Fair opening August 6th. And finally, the Executive Director of PC TOTS, Andrea Barnes, in to talk about her new job and her plans for the organization. Stay tuned. 8:15 now. Good morning. Well, this summer, the Big Gear Show is coming to Park City. And on the phone with details, I have the director of the Big Gear Show, Lance Kamisasaka. Is that how I say it, Lance? How do you say your name?
You said it absolutely perfect.
Okay.
Kamisasaka.
All right. So start by just telling us what the Big Gear Show is.
Sure. Well, the Big Gear Show is a trade event. It's a business-to-business trade event that is focused on hard goods for the outdoor industry. And primarily we're targeting cycling, climbing, camping, and paddle sports.
Okay, and is this the first time to Park City?
It is the first time to Park City. We did have an event on the calendar for 2020 that was to be staging at the Salt Palace, but you know the story with pandemic, we had to cancel that event. And reluctantly we decided not to do something down in Salt Lake City. I have a history of doing events up in Park City at Deer Valley Resort, so we decided to move the event here, and we're super excited to be in Park City.
All right. Well, of course, Utah used to host the Outdoor Retailers event, and this is just a much smaller scale than that?
It's a smaller scale in that we're focused on hard goods, and we're not into maybe more of the fashions that are coming out of the outdoor lifestyle world. We try to say that the show is really built around the products that get people outdoors. So with that focus, it is a smaller event. It was also deliberately a smaller event. We felt very strongly we wanted to have a curated attempt at putting the right buyers together with the right manufacturers and have something that's more intimate, more experiential, and really more meaningful, we believe.
So I want to get to that whole question about whether or not there's even equipment to buy, but it's happening this coming week, August 3rd through the 5th in the Deer Valley parking lots, but it's not open to the public, just local retail, just retailers? And
It's a national show, but it is really focused on retail buyers coming in to look at new products and to do some demo and testing. The original plan in 2020 did have a consumer day. Of course, that show didn't happen. And we thought about bringing that to 2021. But of course, with the pandemic and some of the uncertainties of bringing, you know, lots of people together, we decided against it for this year. But it is on the whiteboard at the moment for 2022. So we hope to be able to bring consumers in to see the latest products as well, but it will probably be next year.
Okay. And then in addition to the exhibition area, you're also offering a number of like 45-minute panels. I mean, really wide variety. Who curated that?
Well, that's a great question. So we felt very strongly that the retail buyers that we're solely focused on for this event would appreciate having some educational content. And what was interesting was this is the first attempt of putting multiple categories together, because typically in the bike industry or the outdoor industry, they have their own kind of siloed shows. And we thought by bringing these groups together, we could have some peer-to-peer activity and we could all learn from one another. So that was kind of the way the thought process started, but not maybe being the best equipped to come up with the content. We went out with our partners, and for cycling, we have the NBDA, which is the National Bicycle Dealers Association, who has a history, a rich history for decades of putting on educational content at trade shows. So they're one of our partners. They brought in a lot of the different categories and different speakers. And then on the outdoor side, we're working with the GOA, which is the Grassroots Alliance Association. And what they're doing is similar to the MBDA and bringing in content and helping us steer, you know, the right content. So we're really excited to have those partners. And we feel the educational piece of this event is equally as important as the product. In fact, conducting a survey prior to launching the event with a lot of different retailers, we were actually really pleased to see that the number one answer to why they would want to attend this event was education over product. So it makes us feel that we made the right decision, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah, one of the panels that caught my eye was just this whole discussion of the supply chain and how we all found out how complex it is and lots of moving parts. So as we bring these manufacturers and buyers together, I mean, is there any equipment to buy? I mean, I'm like order number 470 for a bike order that was placed in March.
Well, the supply channel was completely decimated, as you know, and beyond cycling, it went to many different categories. I'm happy to say that I see some light at the end of the tunnel. I know the manufacturers are beginning to see some supply coming in. Factories are reopening that were shut down for long periods of time. So yes, I mean, it's a little bit of a mixed result because I can't say that every manufacturer is in the same position to take orders and deliver, but I am seeing some light at the end of the tunnel. I focus on bike, and I know bike is becoming caught up to a certain extent. I think some of those long lead times are coming down. And that's really part of why the show is going to take place. We're going to have a lot of discussions about what the future can bring to retail and to our, you know, ultimately to the consumer.
So you might hand that there was actually a bike piece that kind of this a plastic piece, or you know, that went between the frame and the handlebars, and apparently that company in China went out of business due to the pandemic, and nobody could put a bike together. Have you heard something like that?
I recall hearing that, and it reminds me that there's several of those stories where there's been some key items that kept bicycles from actually being delivered and being completely assembled, kind of not too different from what we're hearing about automotive manufacturing with the chip, you know, installed many productions of cars. So yes, I am hearing those stories. And unfortunately, that's where we are right now, but hopefully we're going to get caught up and get bikes delivered pretty quickly.
All right. So who do you have coming?
Oh, we had a lot of people coming. So on the manufacturer side, a few highlights. I'll say in cycling, we have Pinarello, we have Diamondback, we have Turn Cycles, Magnum e-bikes, Boku e-bikes, Quiet Cat e-bikes. E-bikes are really pretty prominent. In outdoor, we have Black Diamond and we have Petzl. We have Johnson Outdoors and many of their brands for the paddle sports. Winona Canoe. It's a great cross section of some great names and a lot of diversity in the different types of products. It should be it's really everything we hope for, particularly in a post pandemic environment that we're working in.
Yeah, how many people are you expecting?
I think if I just count bodies representing the manufacturers and their brand personnel, and then the retailers, plus we have a strong contingent of media coming. I think at peak we'll have about 1,200.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, so we should start to see some media articles about some of the stuff that's going to be there then, huh?
Probably right off the first day, August 3rd, we'll have media putting things online and discussing the education and maybe some of the trends. It should be a diverse amount of media attention from a lot of different titles around the country.
Yeah. And can you talk a little bit about, anything you're particularly excited about? What's new with the gear?
Well, what I'm really most excited about is having the opportunity to bring these groups together that have been kind of sitting in their offices since really the early part of 2019. So it's the first event in over a year and a half where we can get people together. I'm excited. Again, I focus mainly on cycling, and the e-bike community is on fire, and those products are just selling so rapidly. And the development of new batteries and some of the new technology has continued despite the fact we've been in a pandemic. So I'm really interested to see some of the e-bike products that are coming in. But the other bike brands and other bike component companies are all very eager to show some new products too. And I'm a little in the dark. I'm excited to see what they're going to bring.
Yeah, what's interesting about the e-bikes, I got one 6 years ago and, mm-hmm. people would call me out cheater, and I'm like, yeah, but you're in the big diesel truck, dude. But what's so interesting is like how heavy mine is compared to, I picked up one last night, I swear it weighed 35 pounds.
Well, that's exactly some of the technologies that I'm kind of alluding to. We're seeing lighter weight in the battery compartments, we're seeing lighter weight in the drivetrain. Of course, they're taking all the goodness that came out of pedal bikes, carbon fiber technology and so forth, and introducing it to e-bikes. So we're seeing e-bikes that are way down in weight. And by the way, I don't think I shouldn't say anybody, but I think the term cheating is really, really diminished. I think everybody's appreciating what an e-bike can bring to so many different people who want to be able to keep up with a spouse or they have a disability of some sort. E-bikes have been a great, great addition to the cycling community.
Yeah, ride it to work every day.
There you go.
Given that, mm-hmm. though, do we now need to rethink our roads and bike paths? Do you have a panel on that? We are already seeing some challenges here in Park City with narrow pathways.
Yeah, well, People for Bikes, who you may know the organization, is another partner of the show. And in fact, they were responsible for helping us create the different bike paths that we want to use that are really off campus from the trail network at Deer Valley Resort. And of course, they tirelessly work every day in trying to create or really trying to fund the various bike programs that are in local communities or national communities. And they have a lot to say about trying to keep cycling at the forefront, among transportation means so that we do get the bike paths and the bike ways that we need. It's an ongoing battle. I've been in the industry for over 30 years. I've seen how much change and how much progress groups like People for Bikes have made, but we still have a long way to go. And as we continue to sell more bikes and get more e-bikes on the road, it's just only going to be more focused and more intense.
Okay. And I prefer mountain biking over road biking, so let's stick with that. What are the big changes that we've seen there? Of course, some of the geometry has changed. We're down to one sprocket in the front.
Yeah, well, gravel, which is a whole other category, has really been the dominant kind of off-road bike of choice these days because a gravel bike can offer so much to so many different people. And a lot of folks believe that if they had to buy one bike and hang it on a hook in the garage, it would be a gravel bike. So, I mean, a lot of technology come out of that movement and that discipline. And to your point, we are seeing, you know, single chain ring drive trains with 12 gears in the back, a huge wide variety of gears to choose from. So it eliminates the front derailleur and some of the complications that we have from that. But I think the gravel movement and some of the lightweight design that's gone into that is kind of leaking out to the downhill bikes and to the cross-country mountain bikes. So we're seeing just I couldn't be more thrilled with the way these bikes are shaping up in terms of how reliable they are and how much fun they are to ride.
Hmm. All right. And eventually, I mean, are we all headed towards a 29-inch wheel on mountain bikes?
I think it depends on the size of the rider. I personally ride a 29 bike. I'm a little bit over 6 feet tall. I can navigate a 29-inch bike better on a tight trail than maybe a smaller person. So I think the 27.5-inch wheel bike, the 650 as they call it, is maybe better for the smaller riders, so they have a bit more maneuverability on tight trails.
Hmm. Okay. Hey, anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
Well, I just want to say we're thrilled to be in Park City. I'm now a resident of Park City for the past 2 years. I've always loved the area. And I, in my previous life, hosted a lot of events at Deer Valley. So to bring this event to the area is super exciting for everyone. I know the event's going to be really strong, and we hope to come back much bigger and broader next year.
Okay. Well, Lance, appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Great talking to you, Leslie. Thanks for the time.
Lance Kamasaska is the director, the bike director of the Big Gear Show, again coming to Park City next week. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW, News Time Now, 828. Well, still to come, we'll be talking Summit County Fair, and later on, Andrea Barnes is the new executive director of PC Tots. First, the Camas Food Bank has closed. The 50 or so families who receive food supplements there will now have to travel to the Coville or Heber food banks until a mobile food truck can be set up. When Ryan Stark's family purchased the building that housed the Camas Food Bank at 30 South Main Street, they offered the food bank a month-to-month lease. But Tom Hogan, COO of Community Action Services, this is the agency that operates several food banks in northern Utah, says the rent was quadrupled from $350 a month to $1,400 a month. And he says it wasn't something they could swing given the deteriorating condition of the building.
We're a little over a year into this process, and there's probably a few more years of work to be done.
The building was, there was poor wiring and poor plumbing and no heat and no air conditioning, and there were just a number of things that at $350 a month you put up with.
Stark says his family bought three buildings at the food bank location, the building that the food bank was housed in, which he says is the oldest building in Camas, as well as the old firehouse and a storage garage at the back of the property. He says the plan is to rehabilitate two of those three historic buildings. They have filed an application with the city of Camas for a restaurant in the old fire station and perhaps a drive-through coffee shop where the food bank's was. He says since those plans are still a ways off, the food bank could have stayed.
I reached out to them. They didn't have a lease agreement in place. It was kind of an informal thing with the fire station. And so we reached out to them. They asked me to put a lease together just month to month. So I did that. They were there for a month. And then on the next month, they said that they were planning to leave. And they didn't give me any reason why. They definitely didn't have to leave because right now, I mean, it would be great for me. Obviously, because I don't have anything there while we're working on with the city and stuff on the planning and the development aspect of it.
And he says he has no idea of why they chose to leave.
I have no idea. I don't know what they were previously paying that wasn't, like, disclosed to me at any point. So they asked me to put together a lease agreement, and I put something out there. They didn't say if it was too high or too low. They didn't say anything. You know, like I said, they just signed it, sent it back to me. And then the next month they said that they were going to look for another location.
Further, he says he never heard from the food bank that the rent was too high.
The one thing I want to make crystal clear is that 100% we did not kick them out. 100%. There was no communication about rents being too high or too low or the building, anything like that. If they had come back and said, hey, you know, it's too high, or I would be more than happy to have any conversations, because the last thing I want to do is impact the community.
Hogan says he's just received funding to bring in a mobile food truck in order to reopen the food bank on a much smaller scale.
I'm in process of purchasing that. So we'll have a mobile food pantry coming online, I'm hoping that towards the end of September, first of October. For now, we're redirecting them into the other two locations.
He has that this is a temporary fix until he can find a permanent location in Camas, hopefully after the first of the year. In the meantime, he says, with the mobile food bank, they'll be able to travel to some more remote areas in Summit and Wasatch County. Stark says the plans for the old buildings has the backing of the Camas Action Group, a community organization, he says, that is helping to lead projects for the revitalization of the Camas Valley. An application for the redevelopment of the historic Firehouse restaurant was before the Camas Planning Commission at their June meeting. Newstime, 8:32.
This is Randy Barton with The Local View. It is on the air here at KPCW, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Why wouldn't you listen? We give you everything you need. Great music. Oh, our playlist, so expansive and marvelous. Proud of it. Fabulous local news and information. You can delight others with your knowledge of local items, affairs, and events. Keep you up to date on the weather, on fires, traffic, everything about pandemic living here in a mountain town. Tune in.
8:33 now. Good morning. Well, it's fair time in Utah. In the studio with details about this year's Summit County Fair, of the county's fair manager, Tyler Orgill, along with Kate Mishgassi with the Park Silly Sunday Market. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Tyler, the fair kicks off August 6th with the popular Demolition Derby running through August 14th. Even with a big price increase in the Derby, it sold out in just a few days, huh?
Yep, correct. We sold out within the first 4 hours of ticket sales opening up.
Days, hours. Wow, yeah. Okay. So how do people get advance notice of that? Is there some insider secret?
they can sign up for our email list. We usually take all of our ticket buyers from years past and include them in this email, and we just send out reminders around the end of April because the tickets go on sale May 1st each year. So that's kind of how we notify people, and if they follow our Facebook page as well, we are always posting there.
Okay. So Summit County has put millions of dollars into the fairgrounds in the last couple of years. Anything that was done during this last year when we were kind of on a COVID break?
During this last year, we got all new power throughout the fairgrounds. We went up to phase 3 power, so we have enough to support all of our food vendors and all the activities we have going on there without bringing in generators. So we were happy to see that come in and be able to improve the facility that way.
Okay, is there still a ways to go with the master plan? Or?
Yep, phase 2 are in the talks right now, but it's a 5-phase plan. So with having phase 1 and kind of a phase 1A done, we've still got a long ways to go.
Okay, and Summit County contracts with the folks who operate the Silly Market. Kate, so what are you in charge of?
Oh, gosh. All sorts of things. I'm basically Tyler's right hand, and we have been contracted with the fair for about the last 8 years. So kind of doing all the operations with the permitting and the logistics and the vendors, also helping with ticket sales, just being Tyler's right hand. So anything he needs done, we're right there to help him out. It's a big job.
Yeah.
Especially for him. And so knowing that he's got event organizers to back him up really helps him kind of breathe a little better. So that's what we're trying to do for him.
Okay. And so you guys take a break from the Silly Market anyway.
Organically, it has always happened. And it just worked out that typically this weekend would be the Tour of Utah. And so then obviously Kimball Arts Fest. And then the third weekend being No Event Weekend, which Park City Municipal had put into place. And so it just really helped out that this is when we really start pushing hard for the fair. There's a lot more that's going on all year round, street, helping out at the fairgrounds. So organically, it's just really worked out. So we're really lucky that way.
Yeah, so your entire staff then?
Our entire staff, we go from silly hats to cowboy hats in a hot second.
So talk Tyler, about some of the days and the times and the regular events that you've got coming back.
All right, so yeah, on the 6th, the 1 week from today, we've got the Demolition Derby, and then we roll into the next week. Starting Tuesday, we have the Open Horse Show, which is a fun family activity, and then the Little Buckaroo Rodeo, which is Wednesday and Thursday evenings. We have the Pet Fest as well on Wednesday afternoon, and then we have the PRCA Rodeo on Friday and Saturday. And Saturday, we also have a parade that morning at 10 a.m., so there's lots of activities. If you're looking for something to do, get out with the kids. Get on the website, summitcountyfair.org, and you can see a schedule of events there and maybe sign up for some of the events we have going on.
Okay, so the food and carnival rides, are they out from Tuesday on?
Yeah, they'll be, the carnival will be there starting on Wednesday. They'll be opening up for operation, and then the food vendors will be there from Tuesday on. Yep.
Okay, and looking at the fair food section, that was I went right to. It says that the locally famous spring chicken sandwiches are going to be available. Do we have like the original folks? Because the restaurant's closed.
Yeah. The original folks actually retired a few years ago, and so we've had some people that have kind of taken the wheel on that and come back to the fair.
Okay. Let's see. And then there's also camping available, and who camps there? I mean, because it's like $150. It's not cheap.
Yeah, it's our price went up a little bit since years past because it was $25 for the entire week. We talked about it with the fair board, and we decided to increase that price. We actually have a lot of people come out. Traditionally, we have about 40 campers out there. That's what we cap it at, because that's what we have the space for. So for a lot of people, it's kind of a tradition to go down and camp at the fair and be there during the week.
So these aren't like the rodeo participants. These are just people who like to camp at the fair.
Yeah,
well, and a lot of them also have livestock. They're showing their livestock for the junior livestock, and so they're there for multiple days to bring in, say, their pigs, and then they have to show their pigs, and then they have to present their pigs. So it's kind of a multi-day, and so it allows them to stay close to their animals because there's a lot of money that goes into these. And then as well, there's a lot of money to be won for these kids to, you know, for all sorts of great things, including college. It's a phenomenal program.
Yeah. So when does that judging take place for the livestock and then the sale?
Yeah, they do. Thursday is confirmation day, and then Friday is showmanship, and then Saturday is sale day. So they have shows going on all day Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
All right. And then when we talk about sale, I mean, the animals going to slaughter.
Yeah, yep, correct. Yep.
Some do, some don't.
Some people buy them just to
some people buy
home.
Them to keep them, yeah. Yes, because you have to understand these kids have been raising their animals, and so they do become very close to them. So there are a lot of times where it's a little bit of everything. So, yeah.
All right. Another big part of the fair, of course, is the fine arts exhibitions. When do folks need to enter their pies and crocheted hats?
So right now, the fine arts is taking submissions at the Kimball Junction Library, the Summit County Library, and then they can also bring it in the day of on Tuesday, August, what is next Tuesday?
7, 8, 9.
The whole week just kind of merges together, yeah.
Next
I believe
Tuesday.
It's the 10th, yeah.
10th, yes.
Okay. And then again, that competition then happens during the week?
Yeah, correct. All the exhibits will open up.
All right. And that is now in the Red Ledges Event Center, which is nice and
beautiful.
Big and air-conditioned.
Yes.
Yes.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And then the yurts are gone.
Yes.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Let's see. In the past, you have offered free transportation for those from the Park City and Snyderville Basin area. Is that going to be offered again?
Not this year, unfortunately. We were trying to find a way with our budget to bring that back, but with the downfall in the TRT revenue, where the fair budget comes from, we weren't able to budget for that this year. So we're hoping to bring that back in coming years.
Okay. Let's see. Kate, what's your favorite part of the fair? You work it, so it's kind of hard.
No, it's you know, it's so uniquely different than what we do here at Park City. So I do have such love for the fair. I mean, everything. I will tell any person who has recently moved here or has been coming for years but maybe never spent summers here, this is your true diehard county fair. And so many of the opportunities are free to come and listen to the live music, to come and see the carnival, to come and see all the livestock. That junior rodeo, the Little Buckaroo, that is the ideal mutton busting. So when you hear about these little kids getting on sheeps and hanging on for dear life, this happens right there, and it is free to come and watch. The only ticketed events we have are the Demolition Derby and the PRC Rodeo, which we still have tickets for the PRC Rodeo. But everything else, you can just come and absolutely enjoy, walk around, see the exhibits. It's amazing. And the Pet Fest. The Pet Fest is where you can bring your goldfish, your lizard, your rabbit, your dog, your cat. They have look-alike contests. All the kids get dressed up with their animals. It is just so much fun. It's a really happy, happy week. and I enjoy every bit of it.
Okay. Well, the carnival rides are also, wristband? Is that how it works?
You can buy a wristband or you can just buy tickets for the carnival rides. Yeah. I personally stay away from those, but that's, but I know that the lines, you know, that everybody enjoys them. Everybody loves them. And every year our carnival rides get a little bit bigger as we improve the area for the fairgrounds so we can always add like a ride or two more. So all the old fashioned games that they have for the carnival, it's right there.
Yeah. How about you, Tyler? What's your favorite part of the fair? I mean, it's probably hard to enjoy when you work so hard on it. But
I enjoy the whole thing, but mostly on the Saturday evening before the PRCA rodeo, when that, you know, that's when we have our highest attendance, just seeing all the people out there, you know, in line for food and enjoying themselves, just being able to know that we kind of create a destination for people to come out. I really enjoy seeing that.
Okay. People want rodeo tickets, summitcountyfair.org.
Correct.
All right. There are two Summit County Fairs. There's one in Ohio. So make sure when you're purchasing your tickets, it says Utah. Utah. Summit County Fair.
Have you had a problem with that?
We have, yes. We actually have. SummitCountyFair.org.
Okay. Anything else you guys need to mention?
No, thanks. We'll see you out there.
Okay. Kate, Tyler, thanks.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:42. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:43. Good morning. Well, plans for an alternate Highway 189 route in Heber are still in the early stages under the Utah Department of Transportation, but moving along. KPCW's Ben Lassiter has this update.
With traffic on U.S. Highway 189 increasing in recent years, the Utah Department of Transportation is looking at ways to ease the strain on Heber's Main Street. Wasatch County Interim Manager Dustin Graybaugh says UDOT is working to find answers.
We're a little over a year into this process, and there's probably a few more years of work to be done.
Currently, Highway 189 and Heber Main Street are the same roadway. Options for alleviating the traffic on Main Street include constructing a new stretch of 189 either east or west of Main Street. That would reroute through traffic and leave Main Street for slower travel, frequent stops, and more pedestrian activity. Last summer, UDOT held information meetings and gathered public comment. It also began a state-funded $3 million environmental impact study this past spring. UDOT spokesperson Jeff Dupay says the study is part of the process to weigh community needs and come up with alternatives to Heber Main Street for Highway 189. Another UDOT representative gave an update at a county council meeting Wednesday night. According to Graybaugh, there are about 15 options on the table that UDOT is considering. He says the county could soon help UDOT finalize a plan for an alternate route.
I think we're probably several months, if not years, away from a final alignment. I expect UDOT will quickly get us options that they're exploring out of those 15. I imagine it'll mail it down to a smaller number. And then they will again solicit feedback from the public about the pros and cons of each of those options. I would expect that's probably sometime next year.
As of now, Graybaugh says Wasatch County's only spent money to preserve land officials think could be used for a corridor road. Actual construction of whichever plan gets the green light is still years down the road.
I think it will end up being, I expect, a number of years before we end up getting UDOT to fund the construction portion of it.
Local county and city officials have said they hoped that could be between 5 and 10 years out. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
KPCW News Time now, 8:45. Well, Andrea Barnes is the new executive director at PC TOT. She joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, congratulations on the appointment. Tell us just a little bit about yourself and why you wanted the job.
Thank you. So I have been in nonprofit work for my entire career. And as I was preparing for the interviews and really thinking about this particular job, I realized I have been in education for over 20 years. And it's something that I deeply love and I'm committed to. And actually, I've been quite across the entire spectrum from universities, K through 12 and now into preschool. And so it's really fun to be able to apply my skill set to this new opportunity.
Okay, so how do you think those experience and crossover for PC TOTS?
Well, one is I have a strong belief that every child deserves an excellent education. And so it's more about my belief about what a child should have the opportunity to do, and the mission of this organization, where they want to make sure that the opportunity gap is closed, that the children that come to this particular these facilities are absolutely ready to thrive once they hit kindergarten and beyond, that they can succeed. That's very, very inspiring to me.
So PC TOTS is not just child tending, it's about preparing the child for 12 years of education ahead of it.
Absolutely. There is a lot of studies that show that if you can help a child to be fully to develop their mind, their emotional and their social skills very, very early, those are the things that are going to help set the stage for them to be successful for the rest of their lives. So it turns out that this pre-K education and child care is very, very important formative time for children.
Yeah. So what's your biggest challenge so far?
Staffing. So this is not just exclusive to our organization. This is a nationwide issue. We are constantly looking to fill out our ranks with qualified people and people who not only love children but also have a basis in early childhood care. And this is a issue that we're wrestling with right now with our board. We are actually really interested in making sure that what we're doing as a nonprofit is trying to set the standards as well. And so we're really looking to increase the level of expertise that we're bringing into our organization, as well as just completely filling in, you know, our assistant teachers and our roaming teachers and things like that. But we want to have bachelor's prepared early preschool education instructors for our kids.
Yeah, so basically you're telling me you want teachers versus babysitters.
Well, we have both. I mean, we have, you know, very young children. We have babies, and that's actually our biggest waiting list is for people who need infant care. So you need loving, kind people who provide a safe and stimulating environment. And so we're not doing preschool way back to those things, but you're doing developmentally appropriate kinds of activities with those children. And then we're moving our threes, fours, and fives pre-K. That's where we're really looking to bring in these bachelor's prepared teachers and to help those teachers mentor all of our other teachers as well.
And the challenge is finding them or being able to pay them what they're worth.
It's both, yeah. So, I mean, and one sort of follows the others. So we're working through those issues with our board. As a matter of fact, we're right in the middle of having a discussion about it. Our board chairman, Deb Danson, who is very, very experienced and has done a lot of studying on the issue, she would love to see PC TOTS lead out on the issue. Like, what is fair pay? What is the right way for us to recognize this important not only developmental issue for children, but also for what families need and for what, you know, the community needs as a whole, because it solves a lot of issues, or at least it addresses a lot of issues that make a functioning society.
Yeah. And I guess given that PC TOTS is based kind of on a sliding scale where a certain percentage, you know, have very low payments, others are paying, I think, market rate. I mean, is that a model that works financially, or is it always just about working, you know, making fundraising to sustain yourself?
I think that our model is actually the beauty of the thing, and it's one of the reasons why we were founded, and that is that there's a massive gap in high quality child care and early childhood education for working families. So child care, it turns out, and early childhood education can take up a huge proportion of people's budgets. It's well over $1,000 a month. Sometimes that's 30%. Sometimes it's more than what people are paying for rent. And so there is a real need in this community for affordable child care. So, you know, we get grants from workforce services for some of our families, so there is some support that way. But I think that in order for us to fulfill our mission, that sliding scale is vital. And so it will always be a nonprofit status. We will be raising money, and we won't apologize for that, because that is one way that we can really solve some of the thorniest issues around this particular topic.
Yeah, KPCW has reported on a specific fundraising project this summer. One of those involved raising enough money to cover tuition for a couple of families. How's that going?
So we have had a very successful year last year. And, you know, it was a combination of both very generous donors as well as the PPP money that came in. And we're looking forward to some more of that additional kind of funding this year. We have a wonderful board. We have some really enthusiastic new board members, and we are really going to go after it this year. We have a community that I think believes in equity, that believes deeply and understands more acutely than ever because of what happened during COVID, how vital and important safe and stimulating child care needs to be. And so we have assertive goals. We want to make this a premier organization. We want this to be a place that people not only all want to work, but that everyone wants to bring their children.
You kind of referenced this. The Department of Workforce Services has about $100 million a year in federal child care subsidies to help families. Do you apply for those?
Yes, we do. And actually, there are several programs right now that we're eligible for. So the state of Utah has about $261 million from the American Rescue Plan that is currently being studied about the best way to allocate it. We're eligible to apply for that. And then there is another program called the CCQS. I am on day 15, so I'm not sure what all of my acronyms are, but I believe it stands for Child Care Quality Services. And we are also eligible to apply for that. And as a matter of fact, we're working really hard to, there are six areas that they look at. And that's what our entire focus is for the next 6 months, is to, you know, strengthen places where we're strong and then to build where we have opportunity to grow.
Yeah. And then bouncing back from COVID, are we back into full numbers?
We are a little bit shy of full numbers, and that has as much to do with staffing issues as it does to do with what our capacity is. So we actually have the physical space to accept 40 more children, and we will only be able to start adding people in as soon as we're able to staff up. So that's obviously, it's a very high priority. We're interviewing people as several times a week, trying to find those people to fill those positions. We have 100 people on our waiting list, so we're anxious to get that done.
Oh, yeah. And then in terms of just what we're seeing with the COVID Delta variant, what does that mean for what you're doing?
Well, thank goodness we've already been through it once, and so we do have some experience on how to handle it. We're watching very, very carefully. I mean, obviously, the CDC came out with some very strong statements yesterday about how transmissible the Delta variant is. And so we are just doing every single thing that the county health is requiring us to do. We are making all of those adjustments, and we're watching to see what's next.
Yeah. Do you require that employees are vaccinated?
Our employees are vaccinated, yes.
Yeah. And the fact that we can't get the youngest kids vaccinated that you're dealing with yet.
That's right. I mean, we're vaccinated to protect them because they can't be vaccinated. So it's a very strong mandate that we feel like we need to be all vaccinated.
Yeah. And then back just to the employee. I mean, you offer what you're hoping is a competitive salary. I mean, do you offer benefits and as well?
For the first time, just a few months ago, the organization started offering medical benefits. So that's exciting. And we are, you know, depending on how our funding models shape up and how successful our fundraising is this year, we would love to move into dental and eye care and then, you know, if we can move into any other benefits, we will. So we care deeply about the quality of experience that our staff has because retention is as important as anything. And we want them to feel valued. And so making sure that we have the right funding models to make sure that we're taking care of them so that they can provide that safe and stimulating care for those kids. That's what we care about.
All right. PC TOTS has two facilities, both in Prospector. I mean, you can't get those staff, but I mean, are there thoughts about perhaps expanding to Snyderville Basin, other areas of the county, or even Wasatch County?
Well, I mean, that's a very timely topic. We actually have been approached to consider expanding into the other areas. It's very preliminary. I can't really talk about it, but to say that there is a great possibility that we might maybe move into Kimball Junction, maybe Silver Creek. There's some other possibilities. So we don't really have strong enough details to be able to move into that, but that's definitely our strategic planning committee on our board is looking into that and like what do we need to do to be prepared for those opportunities.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I would just say that it's a wonderful organization. We care deeply about those kids and we appreciate every single donor who's out there that supported PC Tot. So thank you so much.
Okay. Well, congratulations again. Andrea Barnes is the new executive director at PC Tot. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Fire Chief Paul Hewitt served the Park City area for more than 10 years and was memorialized last night at the Eccles Center for the Performing Arts. He died last Friday in an off-road vehicle accident while on family vacation in Oregon. KPCW's Sean Higgins was there last night and has this report.
Hundreds of people and fellow first responders gathered in Park City to remember Fire Chief Paul Hewitt Thursday night. Hewitt died on July 23rd in Springfield, Oregon, after suffering serious injuries in an off-road vehicle accident while on a family vacation. He was 58 years old. Hewitt was remembered by family, friends, and colleagues as someone who would not only go the extra mile for the people he cared about, but also for the people he had never met. For Hewitt's daughter, Rachel, he was just dad.
I know you all knew him as Fire Chief Paul Hewitt, or Chief, but to me, he was dad. And that's one of the biggest roles Percy can play in his life. And he rocked it.
Hewitt was born in Selma, Alabama, and his family eventually settled in Utah while he was in high school. He began his firefighting career with the Orem Fire Department in 1984 before spending 20 years with the Salt Lake City Fire Department. He joined the Park City Fire District as fire chief in 2011 and frequently described it as his dream job. Park City Deputy Fire Chief Bob Zanetti remembered him as a model firefighter.
Paul loved being a firefighter. He had an image of what a firefighter should be and what they should do. He lived it, he preached it, he wrote about it, and most of all, he backed it up.
In addition to his duties as a firefighter, Hewitt was also an active member of the community and the Park City Rotary Club, where he was president-elect. Hewitt was eulogized by longtime friend Randy Ovison, who spoke to Hewitt's character, compassion, and remarkable ability to bring out the best in whoever he was around.
He had a way of making everything and everyone around him better. He made his departments better, his co-workers better, his friends better. He made his family better. He literally made whatever he set his mind to better. This goes especially for the Park City community in which he lived and which he loved.
The fire district is currently under the leadership of Deputy Chief Zanetti. Zanetti and the Park City Fire District Administrative Board will consider the appointment of a permanent successor to Hewitt in the coming weeks.
And now, our brother, Chief Paul Hewitt, has completed his task. His duties well done. And the bell rings three times in memory of and in tribute to his life and service.
Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
You've been listening to the local news hour here on KPCW Park City. Alex Nat's up next with our Friday Fresh Tracks. Have a great weekend.